Chapter 33, The Samadharja. It was a simple environment, but not primitive. Smit's dacha had settled securely into a hillside near a meltwater stream that in Florence's terms glimmered with sunlight gems and possibly some real ones. The house had several rooms and electricity from a generator. My room had a view of the stream, and I woke to the sound of it, more soothing than the sea. I remembered the sea at Thirul and bit my lips because my mouth had opened to meet the imaginary closeness of Claire's. We had arrived in the dark last night, and I was elated this morning because I had been able to talk to Claire on my Langley phone. I suppose the CIA had business in the Urals, anywhere there were rich minerals, of course. Claire and I had not much time to talk. It was probably an orbital, not stationary, satellite, but our anxious I love yous were much more than just courteous, affectionate punctuation. At breakfast were Smit, Quentin, Ninel, Kirill, Samir, myself, and a couple of Smith's bodyguards. The latter also swarmed all over the house and grounds, silently. One was looking down in a reverie at the stream's brimming luxury. Another seemed to be trying to make his own cell phone work on a glittering ledge. It was the sort of edgy, thawing light that distracts with jagged exaggerations. It was hard to concentrate on anything, hard to make it safe. Breakfast was as ample and aromatic as the Easter feast Smit had provided for Quentin. There were various manifestations of egg, solemn Russian porridge, and heaped buttered toast with garlic or fat raisins. The samovar steamed like an engine. Ninel had already filled our teacups, as Smit seemed to expect that of her. Quentin still sat with childlike frailty and abstracted politeness, certainly not appropriate to the role of mother. Every now and then, Smit's hand lingered gently on the smoothness of Quentin's hair. If the mistress of the Copper Mountain had appeared outside the window, it would not have been inappropriate. Echoing my recent conversation with Claire, I asked Quentin directly, "Do the Ukrainians want to kill you?" She said yes, but so does he, indicating Smit. There was no lightness in her tone, except a stoical faintness. Once again, I was reminded of Claire in prison, except that some irrepressible undercurrent energy from Claire's secrecy wasn't there. Quentin asked me, "How is my mother?" I said, "She seems to be recovering slowly. Claire took her to a doctor. Your brother is cooking for her, but she's desperate to see you. So is Asia. Top salary. Wouldn't you like to go home?" I included Smit. "You could go with her. The Australian police won't interfere with the Australian deep state." It was the first time I had heard it made explicit that Australia had a deep state that was different to America's, and it was me saying it. I resolved to consider it later. Smit said, "But it is you who have arrived to take her home." He seemed newly streamlined, European rather than Austrian, younger and more austere, like a Marseille contract gunman. His gaze was formidably level and informed. I responded also level. "When will that be?" Kirill, Ninel and Samir stopped eating, attentive, innocence restored by the healthy taste of porridge. But Smit answered, Austrian again and sighing. "Ach, not yet, you know, George. You must stay here for a while."